This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Welcome to Maximize Your Hunt, the podcast dedicated to those who want the most out of their hunting property. This podcast explores land management, habitat improvement, and hunting strategies that will help you maximize your time in the field. Follow along as industry professionals that live and breathe white-tailed deer share their secrets to success. And now, the founder of Whitetail Landscapes, your host, John Teeter.
Hi, I'm John Teeter, Whitetail Landscapes. This is Maximize Your Hunt. Welcome back, everybody. I think this is the third podcast I mentioned this, but I just wanted everyone to be aware, I'm doing a giveaway here this month. You have a chance to win a t-shirt from Whitetail Landscapes. In order to do that, you need to email me, john at whitetaillandscapes.com. Go to my website. You can also put in an inquiry through the website. On any of the pages, there's a contact me page. So go ahead and contact me. I asked for two things, and your name, your information, so you can get in the drawing. And number two, any topic that you want. I've been getting a bunch of topics. I'm going to have to sort through those and kind of key out some of the ones that I think would be great for the listenership. But topics you want to hear about. Whether it's, you know, handling invasive plants on landscape on a broader scale, you know, what to recommend for tools to help, you know, do mapping of your property. I mean, all sorts of questions have come in. And the other thing I was going to mention briefly is I've had a chance to talk to a lot of clients. As everyone knows, I've been hunting quite a bit. I've taken the morning off to relax. I'm getting my partner was like, she was like, you're delirious. And I said, I am delirious. I've been hunting so much. I needed a moment to catch my breath. You know, and the movement's been a little sparse at best. And just the quality of deer is pretty low in my area. So, you know, the chances of connecting with some of these more mature deer is really a struggle this time of year. Anyhow, cool part. What was I going to say? I will, I don't know, just tough season. That's all I'm going to say. But I've had so much fun. A cool part is I'm actually leaving this week. I'm actually headed to Wisconsin, and I know what I was going to talk about. I'll get back to the Wisconsin thing in a second. So clients that are on the fence, and I don't want this to be about having a tough hunting season, because it's not about that, but clients are on the fence of hiring somebody. Now, I'm going to go into today, we're going to talk about how to design your property, and this is going to give you some of the framework. Next week, I think we're going to do fundamentals. I was going to do it this week, but I think I'm going to push that to next week. I think the big thing for me is making sure that when you make the decision to hire somebody, you ask the right questions. I had a podcast, I think, on some of the things to ask a consultant. You can see how intimate I am. And I was just going through one of the reports that I'm working on right now. We have about 50 different items that they could potentially do on their property. There's not like three or four, build a bedding area. You see these intricate designs that I do, and I think they're cool. I think they're great. I think they're a great part of the package. They give the framework on the zoning sector and gives a whole bunch of descriptions on how to approach things. But, you know, I want you to be connected with the person. Just because the person sounds racy or good, and here's the other thing. Look at your ecoregion. How familiar are they with your ecoregion and dealing with tough areas and having solutions? It's not just as simple as, again, putting in food plots, building bedding areas. You got to know how and why and where and all the particularities around with that. It's much more involved than that. So you got to connect well with a consultant. I think I've had probably in the last 2 weeks, five individuals that already have had consultants and they're on round two or three with me. I'm the would be the second or third person they're interested in having come out. And I ask them so many more questions than they ask in their consulting visits. And I'm saying to myself, is it you, the client, that's not asking the right questions, or is the consultant the one not providing you the information you need? You need to match the two and have a conversation with them to get to really analyze their approach. And I think there is a huge difference in specificity and knowledge and awareness of some of these individuals that are doing this. And do not make a poor decision. If you're going to invest a lot of money in your property, make sure it's somebody that you trust and somebody that you build a relationship with. And I don't mean that because somebody works in an area, let's say the Midwest, and they're shooting giants and all their clients are shooting 150, 160, 170 inch year over year, that's the right person for you because they're in the ecoregion. That may mean nothing to changing your landscape so it functions appropriately. And I push people to think that way because I have clients that have killed beautiful bucks this year. I made a decision to not continue to post those. I don't need to push my agenda. My agenda, those that listen on this podcast, is to facilitate change and education. And I like to learn along the way, and I'm learning with you at times. And so it's a healthy thing. And this is not, there's no ego in this. I'm not bragging. I don't need to brag. I don't want to brag. I just want to focus on doing things correctly. So hopefully that resonates with people. Sorry to go on a monologue, but something that I've just noticed with talking to these individuals and wanting, I want the work and I want to help these people because that's something that I love to do. But I asked them, they've wasted all this money and they could have just utilized that resource for just better purposes. And I struggle with that. So I think you can all relate. And sometimes it's not about money. It's making the right connection with somebody, but also realizing, you know, what you're bringing to the table. I can tell in 5 minutes after talking to somebody how well we're going to connect. And it's important that you connect with that person. So, all right, ran over. I am going to Wisconsin. I mentioned that earlier. I'm really excited. I'm going for a conference out there. Tom Milsna, who's been on this podcast, him and I are going to a conference together at Acres. And I'm going to get to see some of the people that I just, I'm super, you know, I put some of these folks on pedestals, but they're men and individuals just like me that have a lot of knowledge and experience, but in different areas. And then hopefully I meet up with Todd Chippy. It's opener this weekend for them going into next week. So they'll all be hunting. So I get to get a little hunting camp culture with Tom Thomas, and I'm just really excited to just connect with him. And then really his conference is we're going to get some hands-on training, him and I together. So it's just a chance for him and I to grow a little bit. But anyhow, I just want to keep you guys up to speed in my world. And well, that's it. Let's get into some of the details of how to design your hunting property. And I want to step away and I want you to say that when you're designing your property, you really have to say to yourself, how much time and effort am I willing to invest in the property? Buying a property that requires a lot of work is a bad, bad move. Unless you have the time to do it. Now, ideally, when you buy a property, the thing is it's set up completely and you can just run and gun and you're just doing fine tweaks and maintenance. I mean, those are the ideal scenarios. But 99% of the clients that I work with, that's not the case. You know, they're not buying a property. They're buying a raw property or property that's been mismanaged. Maybe the timber's been high graded. You kind of walk into a situation where you don't really have, you don't have all the best things going for it. So it's buying a property that meets, you know, what your expectations are. And of course, you know, that's neighborhood, you know, what the neighborhood quality of hunting is like, the environment that you're in, you know, location's key. You know, my property's a mile or so from my house, and that convenience factor is huge for my family situation. I like the convenience. I mean, to be able to kind of walk out your back door and go hunt your own hunting property is the ideal scenario for a lot of people. Some people use it as a means to get away, right? They want space from their jobs or even family for that matter. They want to have that freedom. And sometimes I look at properties as freedom fighters or freedom opportunities for folks. And so in the discussion, I just want you to connect with your property and say, what does it mean to me? What does it do for me? How much effort I want to put into it. And so buying the piece of land of your dreams, the things that you've looked forward to, whether you're paying $1,000 an acre or $20,000 an acre, you know, finding that property that meets your dreams is kind of what I think most people are looking forward to. And what that means is going to be different for everybody. You know, there's this kind of mysterious concept that everyone that buys property is happy, and having property is the end all. And, you know, when you hunt hard areas or you have goals that you can't necessarily align with the property, sometimes buying a property is the worst thing you can do. And you're better off going on hunting trips or trying to explore new things or new opportunities or new experiences that maybe are different from the hunting experiences that you had previously in whatever way, shape, or form. Sometimes that might be joining a hunting club in a different area or, you know, appreciating what you have. Sometimes I walk into my property and say, man, some of these bucks are going to live. I've got a decent deer population. The property flows. Everything's kind of set up. I've got these tweaks to make. I feel very content with it. But the quality, meaning the number of deer, the size of deer, you know, those things don't necessarily align with things that I necessarily want, right? But I've kind of become a little bit content with saying, I like the difficulty that I've walked myself into. And here's why. And I've said this multiple times, but when they always say iron sharpens iron. Well, when I'm in a tough situation and I learn through that, that's a character builder. And if I'm able to be successful in my area, in my situation, passing, I feel super successful this year, passing multiple deer. I'll probably kill a doe tonight. And just being able to say that, I can kill a doe tonight, right? Tons of gun pressure. There's been at least, I can't tell you how many deer shot around me. A lot of young bucks. But the reality of it is I can go in, my hunting's still productive. I may hunt with a crossbow tonight. But the, you know, I want to be silent and quiet, but just having that opportunity, being able to say that with 100% certainty that that can happen. And it's a matter of choice. I like that because it's set up right. I may not have the quality of deer that I necessarily want or the quantity of deer that I want, but I can still have great hunting experience. And I just tie in well to that. And I'm just appreciative of that. And I tell you, if I can figure out how to be content and still have good hunting experience and decent quality, not, you know, superb, excellent, but decent quality, I'm going to be a much better off and feel more content and complete in my hunting scenario, just how my mindset works. That is one reason I have not traveled outside of New York State to hunt. I get to work in all these other areas, but I want to experience difficult because I want to grow from it. And without difficult, you don't grow. You can't take me, put me in Illinois, and I have the same feeling as I do in New York. I just won't have the same feeling. I've worked on these properties where the quality is through the roof. You know, I could shoot 150-inch deer every day of the week, it seems like, and I'll never see that quality deer here. But at the same point, I know how to do the hard things to make that property function and designed correctly. And that's the difference between me and I can make a great property superb, beyond superb, and I can make a poor property superb. And that's the difference between coming from a poor living condition or a poor upbringing to coming, you know, starting the bar a lot higher. You get to build your experience from the ground up. So I feel like I'm talking too much about me. Let's talk about the topic here. So designing your property. So there's really kind of five different pieces of designing your property. It's the people part. You know, your ability to analyze and assess your property. Then actually doing the site analysis and assessment. And so coming up with, you know, some of the deficiencies next week when we talk about fundamentals, we're going to get into some of the site analysis pieces of it. I'm going to talk a little bit more about my ecoregion because I'm quite familiar with it, and then go into some of the particulars, how we look at things. And then the design concept, the development, you know, the layering piece of it. You know, you're taking, you know, the, you know, all the way from the geology, you know, component of that is the soil, to, you know, the herbaceous layer, to the mid layer, to the canopy layer, all those different layers, and starting to assess how you're going to approach things. And developing design concepts, and some of those concepts I deal with directly with the clients. We don't get in a lot of that detail on this podcast, but the client visits are a lot different from the level of detail that we provide here on the podcast. These are starting to get the taste buds rolling and starting to think differently. And then getting into the detailed design, actually putting on a map and running through it. And then figuring out, okay, how am I going to implement this and then evolve, having this open mindset. How I'm going to implement and evolve and reevaluate the changes or the changes I've made or want to make in the future. So going through a step-by-step guide, basically in that process, those five essential bullet points will give you a final design. But realize once you get to the implementation phase and reevaluation phase, it's going to refocus you and allow you to dig deeper. Sometimes you can't teach design. Sometimes it's just about seeing and feeling it. I've talked a little bit about being a little more artistic. It's thinking about your property in a way where treat it like a paintbrush or a painting scenario where you're painting on canvas, and that paintbrush is kind of your tool, and it's your tractor, it's your chainsaw, it's use of prescribed fire, it's your tool. And when you're starting to do your design, you're going to feel this flow and energy from your property. And I'd ask you, everyone, go to your property and observe. And feel the energy that your property produces. A lot of times when you have water systems running through your property, you feel that energy of water. I want you to take that same philosophy and sit there. You hear people that get engaged with their food plots. They smell the aromatic aspects of the food in the area. They touch, they feel the watery content of the plants. Get in touch with nature. The other piece of it is you can hear the insects and the birds. And we love deer hunting, and we love the experience of connecting with deer and hearing that grunt, that echoing grunt in the background. You've heard some, I'm sure some of you heard bucks growl, that growling noise, you know, knowing that maturity in that particular animal, or a bleat or an escape, or, you know, the putter of the leaves. Like, all those things are meaningful to you. Now take that same example and start applying to your observatory senses when you're looking at your property. So you're going to dig deeper into yourself. You're going to stage out kind of the mindset. And the mindset is building a property that's functional. So when you're analyzing and assessing yourself, I want you to think about a bunch of things. I want you to think about goals. And we've talked about goals in this podcast. I want you to think about your fears, the fears of change, the fears of preconceived notions, things that you don't know, the guilt of maybe doing something wrong or the mistakes you're going to make, and own that. Figure out your friends, the people that are going to support you, your family, the people that are going to be involved in this process. Look at what society norms are. So many people in society say this is bad or this is good. Think to yourself, societal, but yourself. What is meaningful to you? It's no different from making a decision to vote. You echo, or something echoes or resonates with you. You are connecting with somebody in the voting process. You know, you're voting for a leader of the country or whatever. But the societal norms are going to push you in one direction. Delete those. Figure out what makes sense for you. If you're somebody, and this is a non-target to somebody, but a client that I deal with, he's all about adding different varieties of plants, regardless of if they're natural or not. And I always tell him this, is this biome was developed on natural native plants. And so even something's naturalized in landscape and it's not native, it may not connect as well with that biome like you think. So I would start off naturally, then if you want to get a natural and pick non-native plants, but don't pick plants that are noxious. Like, that would be a rule set. Now, he's gone the opposite route, right? He wants to do all these different things, but he's building something that he thinks will function in the way that would be ideal for the species he's trying to have interest in. But the myopic, or the piece that he misses, is he's focused on one particular animal. He's not looking at the ecosystem as a whole. And I think that's a big failure on his part. I'm not critical of him, and I know he listens to podcasts, so I'm sorry, I'm picking you out, but nobody knows who you are. But I really feel like you are doing a disservice to yourself by making some of those decisions. It's not that I think it's bad. I just think that there's better options. So it's picking a better option versus a worse option in some case. And I actually think there's a lot of medicinal plants that are out there that you could plant in your landscape that are good for animals and humans that we could implement that are not native. But, you know, that's for a different day. So let's get past some of the basics. Understanding yourself. I want you to just connect with that. If you can't build on your strengths, you're going to fail. So I want you to know yourself and have a little wisdom in this. Know what the type of person you are. Are you technical? Are you more of a people person? Are you able to focus on the animals and build off understanding animal behavior in the landscape? Do you know a lot about plants, or do you want to know a lot about plants? Figure out your strengths and figure out what you're capable of doing. Take your relevant skills, your knowledge, and the things that you offer and start thinking about your scope and awareness. And then bring people in that can fill those gaps around you. Your personal strengths are going to advantage you 100%. Know what they are. All right, vision and goals. We've talked about goals previously, but have a vision for the future. Do not think of the property today as acceptable. Look at the property and think about the achievement of your goals. Eventually, someplace down the road, you're going to realize that once you started, once you planted that first tree, that next tree after, and I don't think you literally have to plant trees, but it could be part of your plan. Once you think about the next tree after that, it just goes a lot easier. And the next tree after that goes a lot easier. So think about building on your property, kind of building these layers into your property. And take a no-holds-bar approach. Brainstorm. Anything's on the table. You are definitely, most people, at least most of my clients, they are limited by time or money. And what you might be also limited on is there's ecological constraints on your property. There's legal constraints on some people's properties. I work with people that have had to do restoration because they've had pollution. I mean, everything that's been, anything that you could possibly experience, I've pretty much seen on the landscape. But what do you want to achieve? What do you want it to look like? Right? Do you want to have on your property, do you want to have a high aesthetic value? Do you want to have a food forest? We talked a little bit about that the other week. Maybe you want timber, right? You want to focus on timber and portions of the property. Maybe you want firewood. Maybe you want to have this luscious, like beautiful cabin that you come into that has this, you know, luscious garden in the back, and it's a family getaway. And then there's a hunting aspect to it. But just think about what the property looks like. And the fundamental process is figuring out through this design process is what you bring to the table. And at the end of the day, the site itself can be improved and your goals can be redefined. But what is the greatness that you bring to the table? And I think a lot of people on this podcast, a lot of people listen to this, they have great ideas, they have great concepts, right? But is it framed well enough that you can actually implement things? All right. Understand your personal resources and limitations. Know what you bring to the table. Time, money, energy. I just said this a little bit a second ago. Know your resources on hand. Personal resources, what supplies you need, tools you need, investing in the project. How long is it going to take? You know, can you do it quicker, faster, with more money? Do you want to do it over time? Is it a legacy property? A lot of these properties, landowners want to give that to the next generation. Really think about that. Think about if that's what you actually want to do. Did those kids earn that property? Likely no. But do they benefit from it? Likely yes. How are they going to benefit it? Are they actually going to benefit it? Are they going to appreciate the way you appreciate it? So sometimes it's okay taking a selfish look and say, I don't want to give my kids anything. I also don't necessarily want to make this a legacy property because that son or daughter or family member or somebody you don't even know. You know, I think it's interesting. I listened to this one song and I've heard it a million times over. It's a country song. And it's, you know, a guy sitting in a bar, talks to another guy, and they're having this conversation. And when he dies, he passes, the individual he didn't know at the bar, but he had enough time with him, just an evening. He inherited all his money. He gave him all his money. And I always laugh at that and said, you know, some people that expect the most really don't get the most out of it. And some people that expect the least, when they're given something unfounded, boy, the world opens their eyes. So think about others around you. Don't necessarily think about yourself. It may not be your children that need to benefit from your gains in life, but it could be friends, family, people you don't even know. But people you learn to love and respect can benefit from your decisions. So just think about the things you do. Do you have personal limiting factors, health, age, any social issues that might disconnect you with the environment? Sometimes we have family members that are really big on not cutting timber. They think it's destructive, right? You've got to create this kind of social situation where everything you're doing is acceptable to a spouse, a partner, whomever. And think about some things that might restrict you. A lot of people, there's covenants on these properties, restrictions, limitations. Kind of walk through that and figure out what those limitations may or may not be. Site assessment, most important thing. We're not going to get in a lot of details of that, but understand, next week we'll talk a little bit more about site assessment, but look at the whole system. Each part of the design, I think a lot about solar and solar radiance on the landscape, warm areas, cold areas, slope, soil quality, geology, tree composition, right? Those factors in that. And a lot of times I want it to aesthetically look a certain way, but think about the elements or parts of your design and then start to develop kind of a cadence and understanding of what you want things to look like in your mind. I like things really, really messy in areas that I can't see. And I feel like things really organized in areas that I can see. And that may still be chaotic to some people, but I just think about that. All right, you want to build a map. And having a basis for your map's really tough if you don't have a plan. But I'll just say getting a map's really important. There's a lot of tools. Google Earth is a great tool. It's a free download. It's easy to use. I use it with my clients. And those are not my maps that you see that I post online. But use Google, you know, Google Maps or Google Earth. Use some type of recent imagery. Some of the good recent imagery I've looked at, Onyx now has, you know, pretty good imagery. They've got the leaf off. They've got recent imagery. I think, what's that other company? Well, there's a whole host of different companies that have different maps, but just think about maps and don't get a final printed map until your design's somewhat 3-4 years in the process. You may want to have a map that you can hook magnets to. You can, you know, lay out zones. Clients a lot of times take my maps and blow them up, so they have a kind of a framework. And I've been better at trying to work with clients to get them more information or making sure the designs are as detailed as they need to do the work. You get four maps from me, and those four maps, they have different attributes, and you get this big 120-page binder that is more information than you probably ever want. Most people don't want to read that much, but there's a lot of pictures in there. But it gives you kind of the framework of what you need. And it's not just, hey, I drew up your map this day and then I left you. Like, I could easily do that with all my clients and just walk away and take, you know, my $5,000 and run. But, you know, I've got about 20, I average anywhere between 20 to 32 hours on every project that I work on. And that's a lot of time, you know, so you figure out how many hours that I'm working on each project. It's pretty intimate. I get pretty intimate. I was working on a project that's about 25 acres the other day, and I've got 18 hours into the whole just drawing it out. And I'm like, man, that's a lot. That's a lot of time in a project. So being able to sketch out your property is awesome. I've used CalTopo. I've got a bunch of other tools. I've got some LiDAR mapping that I use. So I got really fine topography lines. I can get down to like, I think a foot and a half, roughly, plus or minus. I think it's a half a foot. So the accuracy is super, super high. But, you know, that doesn't give me some of the geospatial information that I need, particularly some of the vegetation qualities that I try to look at. So I try to assess that when I'm on site. So creating a map or finding a map, you can use a whole bunch of different tools to illustrate on the map. Photoshop's one of them. Inkscape, Illustrator, there's a whole bunch of them that you use. I use a special tool for myself, but you know, whatever tool you want to use, just make sure it aligns with the aesthetic piece of it and gives you enough flexibility to kind of work on that particular design and drawing. And make sure you keep your basic information on there, you know, north indicators, location, scale, anything that's relevant to the size and dimensions of things, just in case you want to use that as a relative, like an instrument to kind of start doing your layout. All right, so the first thing beyond that, so once you get your map, I want you to go back to your property. And I would say to anybody, and I give you homework, all my clients, if you have not owned your property for 1 year, you are making a major, major, major mistake with hiring somebody. Major mistake. I cannot stress that enough. I am a huge advocate of observation. The key to success is observing. And I mentioned that earlier, connecting with your environment. Walk the site, conduct surveys. What wildlife? Where are the trails? What's the soil like? Does it vary across the site? Maybe you have rock outcroppings. You have bedrock exposed. What's growing on the site? What's not natural? you've got resources all around you to figure out what you have and what you don't have. Smell the dirt. Touch the plants. Figure out your boundaries. First thing you do is make sure when you're buying the property, make sure it's surveyed. Stake things out. Cut mark your areas. Build paths and trails so you can access things. If you can build those infrastructure pieces to start, the next piece of this is taking those observation data and start putting on a map. Understanding the information that comes from observation is really important. It aids you in assessing your property. Now, I could do a statistical analysis of how much rainfall on an annual basis in this particular region, and maybe on your local scale, understand the rainfall, the hydrology of the particular area, how your property is insulated from weather, what land features or landforms help insulate it, what the wind speeds do. I mentioned last week in building my backyard property, I was trying to minimize wind. Thinking about the impact of wind on the property is really important. And then, read up. You can do a lot of research online about your geographic, your bioregional, your flora and fauna, your site history. You can develop kind of a better understanding of your property and start to talk to your neighbors. Build some community around your property. It gives you invaluable intelligence on the property itself, because what it does is it connects you with information all around you. So when I meet with the clients, I have a pre-call with them. So you'll call me and say, hey, I want you to come consult. I say, okay, well, I'm going to give you some homework. And the homework assignment is to connect with your neighbors. Maybe you don't feel comfortable. You're an introvert. You don't want to talk to your neighbor. But you can build intel. And intel is observation. Observe your neighbors hunting. Where are they hunting? And then figure out the frequency. And that may impact your design. So understanding the impact of your neighbors on your property is super important. Analyze and assess your site. You started observing. You started building information around your property. Always start with climate first. It's the strongest influence of your site. You cannot alter climate. You can analyze rainfall. You can look at frost dates. You can figure out plant hardiness, but you can't change your climate. Your climate will change naturally over time. It will evolve. But during your lifetime, it's not likely to change significantly. On your base map, you're drawing your map. Make sure when you're walking your property, you could take your property, laminate it. Make sure you're marking out the boundaries. Make sure everything's accurate. I just talked to a client the other day. I'm working on this project. Great client. We had a disconnect on their boundaries. The maps are not aligning with the GIS information that I had online. So I'm getting a disconnect. Like, I'm off approximately 12 acres, approximately. And so I just took notice of that. And I know they listen to the podcast. They're great clients. They will be great clients as well going forward. But I want you to connect and make sure that you have the property that you think you have. So it's just a really important thing. Analyze the geography, the slope, the aspect, major land features, ridges, valleys, the water drainage in your area, how water courses across your landscape, water sources, creeks, dams, ponds. If you're in a low rainfall area and you have water sources, you're nutrient rich. You're water rich, more than likely. So you can leverage all those on your landscape. And we'll definitely talk more about that when we think about fundamentals. Think about the existing trees, the principal plants. Usually there's 4 to 5 principal plants in each, we'll say, little bioregion on your property. Start to figure out what those are and map those out. Your soil types, clay, sand, you have gravelly, loamy soil. What are the rock conditions? Like, are there a lot of rocks? I work with properties where there's a lot of rocks. It's really hard to build infrastructure for deer specifically around rocks. Rocks are super valuable to other type of, insects and invertebrates. So we've got to value rocks. Are the conditions wet, dry, boggy across those particular areas? And then do a sector analysis. Map out all these different aspects of the property on your map. So take an area and draw it up and say, okay, this has this type, top 5 species of plants in this area. This is the age class. This is the soil conditions that I observed. Maybe you get the soil tested so you know all the mineral elements and their respective ratios and factors and coming up with, where I'm deficient. And then look at any impacts from outside forces. Does this have more sun exposure, more wind exposure? Is there flooding in area? Are these susceptible to fire or fire regimes, prescribed fire? Was there pollution, like I mentioned earlier? What's the wildlife usage? And you can rate those on a map. And then as you start to build all those pieces, you're going to find that there's proper relationships between this sector, this zone of the property. Maybe we talk about zone and sectors in a second. But the relationship between different aspects of your property. And then figure out a plan of action, like I said earlier, to enhance it. Hopefully this isn't too in-depth, but it gives you kind of the framework. We're modeling how we want these properties to look. Define microclimates and difference on sites. Some areas are going to be warmer. Some areas are going to be more water. Some areas are going to have a little more boggy. There's going to be fens. There's going to be swamps. There's going to be wetlands. There's going to be forests, the wetlands. Figure out what those climates are like and how they're created. And then look at the topography, the relative slope, and the land configuration on how everything kind of connects to this complete universe. And in your universe, meaning your property, you can influence what species you'll keep or remove on that landscape. And your goal, in most cases, is greater crop diversity. You want more crops. And I'm not talking about beans and corn. I'm talking about native, natural landscape crops. That's it. Plants that exist on your property that are a resource. Those are crops. Summarize and evaluate your goals. So now step back. You've developed this map. You've got all these layout factors, these sectors. Analyze your goals. Can I kill a 200-inch deer? It's not a goal. It's not a goal at this point. Can I increase the volume of utilization on my property? And can I organize my property well enough where there's good biodiversity, where animals are using that all year long, and I'm getting an increase in observation, meaning more animals over time, and they're more likely to exist on the property at a greater rate? That's a great goal to start with. That is an excellent goal to start with. And you can build bubble diagrams, and we talk looking at energy, how to manage energy on the landscape, whether it's water, sun, wind. And you can change these microclimates. So which was once a closed canopy forest could be something else. You could transform it. But you have to look at the soil, the water, before you make those decisions. Don't make something, like if it's a watered area, try not to make it a non-aquatic, you know, do not plant non-aquatic plants in a watered area. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. But look at your resources. You know, do you want to put more plants to increase that biodiversity? Do you want to restore an area? Do you want to add 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 plants to a particular area to increase the biodiversity? That's a resource. That's time. That's effort. That's money, right? And how will those plants do? Some won't live, right? Naturally, plants are not going to necessarily survive. Not every one of them will survive. So you're introducing an expense. The design process is creative. And so I try to be creative with my landscape. Nothing is cookie cutter. No property is the same. I've got basic rules that work really well for deer behavior. But beyond that, no property is the same. So observe, interact, pay attention to your environment. We want to store and capture energy. Well, it's water, it's mineral content, atmospheric energy. We talked about that last week. You want to increase yield. You want everything to be valuable. And you want to maintain a status where, like for deer, for example, they live at 50 inches and lower. We want the most amount of yield at 50 inches and lower. That may mean you have to manage a lot more vegetation than you want annually. Accept feedback from the process. If you cut an area, you don't get the response that you want, at least the regeneration, maybe it wasn't the area, right area to cut, or maybe you didn't cut enough, or maybe the region itself, because of the degraded soils, what was the land use prior to you? Maybe it was highly erodible ground that they just mismanaged. So your resources, your elemental nutrients in the ground will not benefit you long term. You have to replace those or add to them. Let's see. I'm trying to look here. I'm going through my notes on this one. Design from patterns. Everything on the landscape is patternable. You do not see things in straight lines or chunks that are like that are very distinguishable. There's, like I said earlier, where you had the paintbrush on the canvas, things are flowing together. You're going to integrate everything so it functions together. Take some of these natural patterns. I think about some of the areas that I've worked on where there's a lot of white pine and how we've integrated a bunch of different plants in those white pine areas to make them highly productive and interesting for deer. Spacing is critical in that equation. But I replicated what I saw in nature. I used what I saw that functioned well, and I reapplied it on another property. So capitalize on that. If you're not comfortable and your confidence levels are not up, go small. Go slow. And then use those resources around you. Like you have a consultant like me, have somebody come in and give you some manageable, scaled approach to dealing with that particular issue. Value the diversity of your landscape. If you do not have a diverse landscape, you can create it. And once you create it, focus on the edges, the margins. I always say we play in the margins because in the margins, they create these microclimates. So you get like a high canopy and you get a low canopy. And those margins in between those, that's where the moisture is maintained. That's where your diversity. Important things happen at those intersections. So pay attention to that. All right, let's see. We're going to get into a few more little topics. Let's see. I want to talk about this real quick. Zones and sectors. So your concept and your design when you have your map. I want to make sure you're kind of locating and sizing everything. So you develop individual bits and pieces, and you could create bubble diagrams. You can, you know, create dashed lines, but make sure when you're designing your base, like the base layer you're drawing, that you're zoning it appropriately. So I don't really do this with clients until we get to the implementation work, but we sector off the properties and say, okay, I'm here for this day and I'm going to do this technique. We're going to do this cutting technique across the property. That could be hinge cutting, for example. And don't poo-poo hinge cutting. If you do, particularly in the northern latitudes, you're really missing the boat. It's just hinge cutting the right trees. On most of the properties that I work on, a huge percentage of the action, because of the duration or the time it takes to replace species, hinge cutting is one of my ultimate tactics. And even in a property where we're doing extreme hinge cutting, I may only hinge cut about 10% of that total property to create that framework. So I just want you to keep that in mind, is that is a technique, but it's utilized in certain tree species, usually the lower value. But just recognize that there's a time and place for everything. But the zone sector analysis, one of the masters that I've seen design properties, and I'm not talking about deer hunting properties, but other properties for farming, they organize everything so there's a flow between one section and the next. And what that does is it constitutes some organization in how you approach something. But he also does it in a way where he connects land features together and even water features in the landscape. So let's say he's got an orchard in an area. He uses fertigation or water resources with integration of fish and animals, et cetera, in and around those as a means, once water increases, to distribute water in the landscape, feeding the animal and plant life adjacent to that in these particular orchards. And so it's highly organized where this zone is more aquatic, but it feeds a terrestrial site. It's really cool. I mean, I find it absolutely cool how people do things. And, you know, that guy's a super master in design. But the one thing that I've taken away from him specifically is this concept of permanence. And so if you're designing a property, you know, you get this basic idea that as things are less permanent, they're easier to change. I mentioned earlier, climate's really hard to change. Weather's really hard to change. The more energy it takes to change something, the more time or expense it takes to get to a point where it's functional to the way you want it. So sometimes you may pick the wrong property because it may take a Herculean effort to fix something. But what you want to think about is you want to think about some of these basics. And I always start with this. Aesthetics and experience is the easiest thing to change. You can make something look more beautified. You can have a better relationship with the experience to it. But you can't change the climate. So aesthetics and experience would be one, easily changeable, least amount of energy. Soil would be number two. Zones of use, defining zones of use and how you utilize them. And this could be incorporating roads, etc. Building infrastructure would be next. And infrastructure could be, you know, a home, a food forest, anything to collect or have interest in deer. That could also be, you know, some areas we've put in fencing for deer, but influencing and building, you know, these zones to sector off different areas and creating these microclimates. Well, that would be next. Increasing these microclimates, a lot of times it's managing vegetation. And then once that vegetation increases, your next increase opportunity will be wildlife. Wildlife will come after that. And so you recirculate those ideas and you fine tune them. And then you think about the other features. Water, the increase of water in the landscape,
the increase or changing of landform. So I've seen individuals take, you know, a hedgerow and deplete it or delete it on the landscape. You can change some of the features. You can change the terrain shapes. You can put in benches. So you can do a lot on the landscape, but you're not likely to change climate. But in that energy use, you're going to lose time, money, I think focus. And I say that with an explanation point. There is focus that you lose when you start to make major changes to things that are permanent. So there's no hard and fast rule with what I just said, but your design thinking should start with the easiest things and work to the hardest things. Some things we work with take a little while, and some things take a long while. So think a little bit about that. I want to get quickly back to just a couple essentials, just so you have the framework for next week. So when you are building your infrastructure, and that's one of the things we talked about earlier, your water storage system, water harvesting, some properties that work on, they have irrigation. The first thing before you get there is making sure you can access those areas, whether there are two tracks or farm roads or paths. And then the last thing I'll tell you, on all these properties, if you don't live there and you've got to travel back and forth 2 or 3 hours, you really need permanent structure. I'd most likely have a client buy a piece of property, you know, and then maybe they just need to have a shed to stay in so they can have a shed. Maybe they got a local area where they go take a nice hot bath or shower after working. Or maybe they, you know, they have the money to put a small structure, you know, where they can have, you know, water, you know, you could have a well, electricity, et cetera. And then I've been to some client properties, their cabins are nicer than my house. You know, they're just, they're compounds. And so I'll just say, whatever you need, being able to stay on your site as long as possible is critical, or buy a site that's close and convenient. And then once you get into the details of your design, creating softer edges, these margins, all the placement of things, go back to your needs. Go back to your yield analysis. You want to increase the volume of food, the volume of cover in the landscape. A lot of times what you'll find, most clients make this big mistake, and I'm going to end right here. And I know I've been all over the place, but I took notes on this yesterday when I was in the tree stand, because I'm building these podcasts when I'm in the tree stand. I'm thinking, what do I want to talk about? And I want to talk about how to build a property. And there's a lot of layers here. And if you go back and listen this more times over, you're going to say, man, there's a lot in here. But you need to think about how each piece of these zones and sectors. So you've got a zone within a sector. A sector would be an area. And then within that zone, you're going to define a purpose for that zone. And then you're going to figure out what the outcome of that zone is. But you need to make sure that the zones and the sectors connect to one another. So this sector connects to that sector. And that's how you create good and flow movement on the landscape. This random assembly that guys go on, I've been on a lot of different properties, and it's just randomness. They've just created randomness without on the property. And there can be positive results from randomness, don't get me wrong, but it's unexpected. When I come in the property and give you a design, everything is daisy chain linked together. And what it does is it creates more robust design. It makes you to be more structured in your approach, minimizes risk, and it makes you more creative. And during this process, focusing on permanence, focusing on basic design layout principles, and focusing on these zones and sectors that are well connected to each other, you are going to be highly, highly successful. All right. I'm talked out today. Thank you. Please go in. 5-star review. Hopefully this was helpful. Next week's going to be even more detailed. We're going to get into the fundamentals, like nuts and bolts, how I assess a property. This is going to help you buy properties. It's going to help you look at your own property. It's going to give you some framework. So use some of these bits of information here to give you that design toolkit functionality that you need in your back pocket when you start to look at your property. All right, that's it. I will talk to you all again next week. Make sure you go in, 5-star review, send me an email, go to my website. Please contact me if you want to get into the giveaway. Hopefully everybody's doing well. Good luck hunting season. See y'all. Bye.
Maximize Your Hunt is a production of Whitetail Landscapes. For more information on how John Teeter and his team of experts can help you maximize your hunt, check out whitetaillandscapes.com.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kids will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.